We
are.
We
are.
We are cultivate.
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 We are cultivate.
Hello and welcome to Ye Olde Crime, where we discuss the funny, strange, and obscure crimes of yesteryear. I'm your host, Lindsay Valenti, and with me is my sister and co-host, Maddie Stengel.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. On this very sunny, bright, warm day.
Okay. Yeah. It's snowing.
It's snowing, and it's that annoying heavy snow.
Mm-hmm. And it's gonna be annoying heavy snow for a couple days. So Where were you back in December? You know? But it's right. Fine.
I just hope it isn't too bad when it comes down to next weekend with the Easter egg hunts. I always get really sad for the kids who like have to not search for eggs outside, or they do and it's gross, you know? Like it's cold and you don't really want to be outside.
Yeah.
I usually prefer the Easters where it's just a little warmer, at least, like a light jacket kind of a thing. Wasn't it April 17th?
Geniality.
Is it April 17th? There's
something like that. I was going to say, just need a light jacket.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that movie. I should watch that movie again. We are in our final week of Wicked Mock Madness.
Where did the month go?
Oh my God, right? Jesus.
Crazy.
Jesus. Cheeses. He's coming for Easters. So.
Did you just make that up?
I did.
Oh my God.
He's coming for Easters. Alrighty. So, to close us out, today we are going to be discussing Lilia's 80, the Tory Barn Witch.
Ooh. Barn Witch.
Yep. Specific person this time. Information was pulled from the following sources: a 2023 My Veggie Travels blog post by Sarah, 2021 Welcome to Fife article by Scotland Stories, 2019 All That's Interesting article by Marco Margaritov, a 2019 Smithsonian Magazine article by Bridget Katz, 2019 The Washington Post article by Megan Flynn, 2017 Atlas Obscura article by Natasha Frost, a 2017 BBC article, Atlas Obscura, End Goal, IZI Travel, The Occult Encyclopedia, Wikipedia, and a YouTube video by Mackie Outdoors.
Ooh, a YouTube video. You never have those.
It was primarily so I knew how to say things.
That's so fair. That's a good idea. I was like, actually, like just doing a bunch of different, like a couple different ones. Like, how do you say it? How do you say it?
Yeah. He, like, said all the things that I didn't know how to say, and I was like, you go, Mackie Outdoors. You go. Nice. So, figured I'd give him his due credit.
And as you should. Yeah.
And links to all of these articles will be included in the show notes. Show notes. The show notes. Jeez. Got something you want to say? Shoot us an email over at yeoldcrimepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your story ideas, see any gifts you send our way, or if you just want to say hello. We're pretty friendly. Speaking of friendly, if you'd like to have real-time conversations with us, consider joining our Discord over at the Cultivate Network. You can chat with us over at the Old Crimers Cubby, or catch up with any of the other great creators that are part of the Cultivate family of podcasts. Just click the link in our show notes or over on our link tree to get started today.
Yeah, so we're coming in hot today.
We are coming in hot. My golly geez. Okay. As we've discussed in the past, Scotland has a pretty storied history when it comes to its share of witch hysteria.
Yeah. They're a little aggressive.
Yeah. In fact, according to an article on Atlas Obscura, it held more witch trials and subsequent executions than any other European nation.
I'm not surprised, but also I would have to assume, too, that, like, well, actually, maybe I shouldn't assume. Is that just like based on the per capita? Or is that like actual, they had more witch hunts and stuff than any other place?
I think it's not surprising given King James VI of Scotland,
right,
/ King James I of England. I think that's part of why that is.
Mm-hmm. The whole conspiracy that the entire country was against him.
Yep. Witches abound. Fun fact, between the 16th and 17th centuries, it's estimated that anywhere between 3,000 and 4,000 people were tried in Scotland, and of those, at least 2/3 were put to death.
That's horrific. Oh my god.
In fact, according to the Survey of Scottish Witchcraft website, it identifies that 468 men were accused of being witches or warlocks versus 2,702 women.
Hmm.
And those are just the ones they were able to find documentation on.
Great.
So there could be many, many more that were just...
I'm sure there are. That were just never like recorded. One-offs.
Yep. Today, we're returning to the county of Fife, specifically to the coastal town of Torrybarn, which is located on the northern shore of the Firth of Forth. I get to say it 2 times this month. That makes me so happy. The Firth of Forth. Again, probably with an Irish accent.
Right. It's all good.
Today, this little village and parish boasts a population of around 1,030 as of mid-2020.
That's not bad.
Significantly smaller than the last place we were at in Fife.
Yeah.
Torrybarn was once home to Lilius Adie, who was a poor and elderly 64-year-old healer and herbalist in 1704.
Uh-oh. There's that, the dreaded H word.
Yep. It's a 3 this time. She's elderly, she's poor, and she heals people.
Did you know that if you move the lines of an H, you can make a W for witch? That's no coincidence. Is it a W? Because there's not enough lines? Yes. It's for witch. She's a witch.
She's a witch. It's unclear if she could read, but she did possess a fierce intelligence and imagination. It is also likely that she had poor eyesight and mobility issues, likely making her housebound the majority of the time. Wow. Speaking is hard for me.
She ticked all the boxes of the classic witch.
Yeah, she did.
If mm-hmm. there was anything like a witch profiler at the time.
Yeah.
CSI witchcraft. They would have picked her out in the lineup.
Someone takes their monocle off.
And then it's just like little harps doing the
who. Yeah. And then a bunch of owls get shot down for...
Well, I was just going to say the hoot noises are actually like a piccolo or something. Some sort of flute.
That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. A pan flute, if you will. Yes. Her neighbor, Jean Bishop, stated that she felt delirious after enjoying a night of drinking. So logically, it would make sense that Lilius had summoned Satan himself to cast a spell on her.
Right. Because alcohol is not the problem here.
No.
Nor is her imbibing.
No.
Right. I just really wanted to say imbibe. Sorry.
No, you're fine. She even went so far as to warn other neighbors, quote, "Beware lest Lilius Adie come upon you and your child," end quote.
Oh, no, she did not just threaten the child, too.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
She's like, yep.
She's like, listen.
At first, people shrugged off the accusations as Jean was just trying to essentially blame her love of drink on someone else. And she was a known alcoholic.
And if you're a known alcoholic, you probably hallucinate quite a bit, too.
Well, and the funny thing is, there was... I didn't include this in here, but that's because I really wanted to just talk about it organically. There was, like, a town hall meeting, if you will, that happened around this time. And she mentioned this thing during the meeting. And her husband was there. And when she brought that up and accused Lilius of summoning Satan or whatever, He was like, I can just beat her till she's sober so she stops saying this stuff.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh my God. Okay. So it's a known issue then that your wife likes the bottle. Okay. Cool.
Wow.
We just casually talk about beating our wives until they're sober. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's the 1700s. It's cool. And it wasn't until the finger of blame was placed on Lilias again by another woman who was named Jean Nielsen that everything changed for the worse.
Uh-oh. Jean is a reputable name.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
So the day after this, Jean Bishop continued to behave, quote, strangely distempered, end quote, going so far as crying out, quote, by God, he is going to take me. By Christ, he is going to take me. Oh, Lily with her blue doublet, end quote.
That's a doublet.
It's like a vest, like her blue vest type of thing.
Oh.
So like something that you wear.
I wonder if that was her healer uniform. Because didn't they used to wear blue?
Remember a couple weeks ago when we were talking about how Satan loves nautical colors? Where it was like...
Oh, yeah. Like blue and purple and...
Yeah, I wonder if this is that. This is kind of harkening back to that. Because, you know, when I think Satan, I think sailor suit.
The sea? I think of the sea. Yeah.
I think of a jaunty sailor.
Honestly, I would believe that hell is in, like, the deepest pits of the ocean.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah. Like, one, because it's, you know, close to the Earth's core. But, like, two... It's scary. Like, every time we venture just a little bit down, it's more terrifying. So I'm with you there. I bet Satan is in the ocean somewhere. Just, you know.
Yeah.
Great big jacuzzi in the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Hanging out with the Kraken. It's fine.
The Earth's jacuzzi.
Meanwhile, at the meeting the night prior, you know, the one where... The other Jean's husband was like, I'll just slap the sober into her.
Yeah.
Jean Nielsen stated that Lilias, quote, dreadfully tormented her, end quote.
Uh-oh.
So apparently, because two Jeans don't make right, Lilias was subsequently arrested on July 28th, 1704, before she was dragged before the local minister, Reverend Alan Logan. It was there that she was accused of not only practicing magic, but of fornicating with the devil as well.
Uh-oh. Somebody went deep sea dive into that jacuzzi.
Apparently, claims were laid against her that she was, quote, an instrument of Satan, channeling the devil's powers to molest neighbors she didn't get along with, end quote.
Oh.
Yeah. That old chestnut.
I don't know if I would molest people I didn't like.
Especially in either of the Jeans.
Right, like if I don't like you, I don't want to touch you. Like in any way.
Yeah. If anything, I want to stay as far away from you as humanly possible.
Right, like
or inhumanly possible.
Like stay in her house the way she was.
Her trial started on July 29th and lasted a month, during which she was subject to long periods of torture, including sleep deprivation or witch pricking, as they called it. They even had a fun name for it, in order to get her to confess. She was interviewed 7 times during that 4-week period and taken to church twice to confess.
So she was tortured 7 times and had 2 chances to let the church know of her guilt and all her misdeeds.
Yep.
Great. Oh, God, witch pricking.
Thanks to a preserved collection of the July to September 1704 Kirk Council meeting minutes, we're able to learn more about Lilias's trial and what was said.
Oh, God.
During her confession, it was recorded that she, quote, first met the devil in a cornfield just before sundown, end quote, on a hot July evening about 3 years prior in 1701.
Sounds sexy.
Oh, it gets sexier. She described him as wearing a hat, and he had cold, pale black skin and cloven hoofed feet like a cow.
Gross!
Yep.
He was a black cow with a hat.
Yeah, pretty much. In a move like something out of a smutty romance novel, she stated that he took her behind a pile of wheat sheaves, where he proceeded to put one hand on the crown of her head and the other on the soles of her feet before persuading her to renounce her baptism. He must have go-go gadget arms because I don't know how that works. I was just going to say,
that's horrific. Now I'm imagining this cow with like abnormally long hooves.
Or maybe he increased in size. I don't know how that works. Either way, afterwards, he claimed that all of her belonged to him and, quote, laid with her carnally, end quote.
Oh.
Brown chicken, brown cow. Or black cow in this place. Yeah. Following this, he would start to visit her at her home, quote, like a shadow, end quote. She also confessed to attending other meetings and dancing with the devil in groups. Hmm. She also, in one thing, and I don't know why I'm laughing about it, but apparently in one telling in one of my sources, she said that like they had sex all the time. Like they were just almost nonstop fucking. So
okay.
Good on you, Lilius. Like, I mean, yeah.
Get it.
Get it?
That's why she was home all the time.
She couldn't leave. She couldn't walk.
She couldn't leave.
After all that.
I'm tired.
All that shadow play.
Yeah, there's not a lot of Gatorade back then.
No. When pressed for the names of the other witches that she supposedly met up with, she refused to give any who hadn't already been located.
Nice.
Or who hadn't already been
accused.
Put to death.
See, that's what you're supposed to do.
Hoes before double bros. That's how it goes.
You don't know them. You don't know them. They're already dead.
Nope.
You wouldn't know they died.
According to Dr. Louise Yeoman, a BBC historian, quote, the point of the interrogation and its cruelties was to get names. Mm-hmm. Lias said that she couldn't give the names of other women at the witches' gatherings as they were masked like gentlewomen, end quote.
Oh.
So they obscured their faces.
Yeah.
So even if she wanted to name names, she couldn't. Because they were all wearing masks.
Good on you.
Unlike many accused witches, who would ultimately be strangled and burnt at the stake, Lilias died in captivity on August 29th, 1704. While historians believe that she likely completed suicide, others believe she simply perished as a result of the torture and mistreatment. I mean, it was a month.
Yeah. It was a month, and if you think August, too, at that time, it'd probably be really hot, and she was older,
yep.
And I doubt she was hydrated or fed.
And who knows what the conditions at the jail were like, where she was being held.
Yeah, probably not great.
And she was purposefully kept awake, so it's not like her body had any time to...
Yeah, but she just had a stroke.
Yeah. Either way, interrogators had a bit of a conundrum on their hands now. Lilias died before she could be pronounced guilty, so she couldn't be burned at the stake.
Ooh.
And because she was an accused quote-unquote witch, she couldn't be laid to rest on consecrated ground at a church.
Shit.
So it was suggested that she be buried at low tide in the Firth of Forth estuary in a crude, muddy grave, with a half-ton slab placed atop her grave to prevent her from reanimating and coming back to exact her revenge on the living.
Right.
Because if you'll recall,
yeah,
the possibility of a witch rising from the dead was like the modern day equivalent of a convicted murderer escaping from a low security prison.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, why they chose such a unique and extreme means of disposing of her corpse. After all, if she were to return as a revenant, which is what they called witches reanimated by Satan back then, depending on when she quote-unquote woke up, she could be underwater, and not only that, but she'd be covered by a giant heavy rock, preventing her from doing the devil's bidding. So either way, win-win. She can't go anywhere.
Yeah, try waking up.
Covered in mud, underneath a giant rock, underwater.
Yeah.
Fun fact, the term revenant comes from the Latin reveniens, or returning, and the French verb revenir, or to come back.
Hmm.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
So the reason Lilias's death and burial is so significant is the fact that hers is the only example of a sea internment of an accused witch taking place in Scotland.
Yeah.
And not only that, but hers is the only witch's grave in all of Scotland.
Oh, yeah, because everybody else was burned.
So yeah. None of them were buried.
Damn.
And because people are monsters, trophy hunters would disturb her resting place over the centuries following her death, specifically when her simple wooden coffin, which was essentially a locked wooden box, was found and pilfered in 1852 by curio hunters such as Robert Baxter Brimer. There are reports that a cane belonging to philanthropist Andrew Carnegie was fashioned from wood from her coffin.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that fact, actually. Carnegies were weird.
Another walking stick that was believed to be crafted from wood from her coffin was donated to the Pittencrieff House Museum in Dunfermline in 1927 that had a silver band near the handle engraved with the phrase, quote, Lilius Ady, 1704, end quote. So they weren't even, like, hiding
trying
the
fact. Trying to be subtle. Awesome. They didn't treat her like a person because she wasn't a person to them. She was a story.
So who cares, right? Mm-hmm. Unsurprisingly, bits of her skeleton were stolen and sold as souvenirs to antique collectors.
Yep.
At the time of her grave robbing, it was noted that her coffin was about 6 feet and 6 inches long. When her thigh bones were measured, they were compared to those of a man, and it was estimated that she would have been around 6 feet tall.
Dang.
Which is really something.
Really, really. That would be the equivalent of like a 6'4" woman today.
Yeah. Very, very tall.
Because wasn't the average height in the 1700s like 5'5"?
Like 5 feet?
Or something like. Yeah.
Like between 5 and 5.5?
Because I remember George Washington being tall because he was 6 feet. So he didn't fit in like any ships. Because I think the clearance was like 5'8".
People thought he was like a giant. Yeah.
Dang.
Her skull still held most of her teeth, which were described as, quote, white and fresh, end quote.
Good on you.
She took care of her teeth, apparently, which is good.
Apparently nobody wanted those. That's strange to me. Don't people like that take teeth?
Ugh, God. Gross. Probably. One part of her that went missing was her skull, which grave raiders retrieved for a celebrated local antiquarian named Joseph Neil Patton, who had an interest in phrenology.
Of course.
It's unclear if he was able to quote-unquote determine anything about Lilius from her skull, although he described it as, quote, rather below than above a middle size, with the animal preponderating very much over the intellectual or moral region, end quote.
Right.
You know, as one says.
Right.
Upon his death, his extensive collection of, like, all manner of human oddities was inherited by his son, Sir Joseph Noel Patton, who gifted Lilius's skull to the Fife Medical Association, who in turn gave it to the students at the University of St. Andrews, where it was photographed in 1904 as part of their anatomy collection. At that time, it was noted that she had prominent cheekbones, a nose with a high bridge, and she still had her white teeth. It was last displayed in 1938 at the Empire Exhibition at Bellahouston Park in Glasgow, but since then it has gone missing. In 2014, a quest was launched by Fife officials to locate the missing parts of Lilius's remains when archaeologist Douglas Spears, who is a member of the Fife Council, went looking for her final resting place. Using historical accounts, Douglas and Dr. Louise, quote, found a seaweed-covered slab of stone exactly where the documents described. In a group of rocks near the Torybearn Railway Bridge lay the great stone doorstep that lies over the rifled grave of Lily Ady, and a rock with the remains of an iron ring, end quote.
Interesting.
In 2017, a team of forensic scientists from Dundee University's Center for Anatomy and Human Identification, led by Dr. Christopher Wren, used photographs of her skull from the University of St. Andrews to create a 3D image of what she may have looked like.
Nice. I love it when they do that.
In an interview with BBC, Christopher stated, quote, "There was nothing in Lilias's story that suggested to me that nowadays she would be considered as anything other than a victim of horrible circumstances. So I saw no reason to pull the face into an unpleasant or mean expression, and she ended up having quite a kind face, quite naturally," end quote.
Yeah. I mean, if she was a healer,
yep,
kind of have to be.
To date, she is the only accused witch in Scotland's dark history who has a face tied to her name.
Mm.
In the words of Louise Yeoman, quote, "It's sad to think her neighbors expected some terrifying monster when she was actually an innocent person who'd suffered terribly. Lilias died a lonely, unmourned death, but she was also a courageous woman. Through this recreation, we've been able to look at her face and see her as a person, and hopefully give her a more thoughtful place in Scottish history," end quote.
I hope.
A group led by local residents, as well as members of the Fife Witches Remembered, worked together to commemorate and honor the life and memory of Lilias. Part of this was a memorial service that was held for her in Torrybarn on August 31st, 2019, exactly 315 years after her tragic death. Deputy Provost of Fife Council Julie Ford laid a wreath at the site of her grave. The memorial is located just off Main Street in Torrybarn, consisting of a bust of her likeness, along with a circular plaque that is part of the Fife Witches Memorial Trail, which honors those accused of witchcraft at Torrybarn, Valleyfield Woods, and Cúras. The plaque is a coin memorial on the pavement before the bridge, directly in line with her quote-unquote headstone. So the slab that covers her grave. The memorial reads as follows. Quote, "Lilias Ady, 1640 to 1704. They feared she would rise from the dead. How could she, as she was an ordinary woman accused?" End quote. And sadly, to date, the rest of Lilias's remains have yet to be returned so she can be given a formal and dignified burial.
Yeah, I think the odds of that happening are very slim.
Unless the bulk of her body is in like one particular collector's collection, or it was donated to a museum or something, like,
right,
it's gone, which is really sad.
Yeah.
And that's the story of Lilias Ady. Looking for more content? You can find us online at yieldcrimepodcast.com. If you'd like to see pictures from this week's episode, not to mention bonus content and funny memes, make sure to follow us on Twitter at yieldcrimepod and on Facebook and Instagram at yieldcrimepodcast. On TikTok? Of course you are. Follow us at yieldcrimepodcast.
Do you find true crime podcasts too murdery?
Do you hate true crime altogether?
Has that pesky day job kept you from the life of crime you've been dreaming of?
Do you breathe oxygen?
If you've answered yes to any of these questions, then we have the podcast for you.
Live Laugh Larceny, a true petty crime podcast, brings the drama to dumb criminal stories, presenting each crime as a fully produced short story.
Our variety show podcast has it all. Sound effects, parody songs, terrible reenactments, and did we mention drama?
Join us, Amanda and Trevin, each Wednesday as we share our dreadful dilemmas, killer facts, and then jump into the sick and twisted world of petty crimes.
We're talking old people fights, scorned lovers, and people solving their problems with feces.
That's enough with the listing. Let's roll with the clip.
Thank you all for joining us today as we announce the gender of our little peanut,
Cheryl shouted out.
I'm not sure what exactly Anthony came up with for this reveal, but he has told me to warn you all to please step back and plug your ears. So if you'll all join me in a countdown, 3, 2, 1.
It was at that moment, a gigantic explosion erupted from the ground below at the quarry, releasing immense amounts of pressure out into the air. The boom sent chunks of earth flying and panic to spread throughout the event. Shockwaves rattled the foundation in which guests stood and didn't stop there. Traveling at rapid speed, cracks in the earth began to spread throughout a 20-mile radius, causing pictures to fall off of nearby home walls and turning tap water a murky brown color. You can find Live Laugh Larceny on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Bye.
See ya.
This month's podcast plug is the Live Laugh Larceny podcast, hosted by two longtime friends, Amanda and Trevin. Live Laugh Larceny sets out to change everything you know about true crime and comedy podcasts. They bring you small-time petty crimes in an overly dramatic tone. So if you've ever felt that true crime podcasts were a little too murdery, or you think that having your phone stolen is the worst thing that could possibly ever happen to you, come and get petty.
Nice.
And we will have a link to their show in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And this week's listener question, once again, comes from our friend Carrie Ann.
Hey, Carrie Ann.
And this is kind of a two-parter.
Mm.
You have been given the vision of an apocalyptic event happening.
Okay.
You can save 10 people. Who do you bring and what 10 items do you bring?
Oh, this is bad, because I don't want to survive an apocalypse. Like, I don't want to be a part of it. I just want to, like, pick them and be like, okay, go have fun, bye.
Live in my honor and memory.
Oh.
I say you can do that.
So I think, I don't know necessarily names of people. I would do my best to find them, I think. But I would choose a really brilliant architect, somebody that could build and construct well. I would probably have some sort of kind of blue collar worker that would know how to develop what the architect can make and design. I would save somebody who knows a lot about cooking in the wild and kind of like almost post-apocalyptic cooking. So like, you know, there's always those kind of like biologists and stuff that know exactly like what mushrooms to eat and kind of what's safe and preserving and stuff that way. So somebody who knows how to survive, like not necessarily like what crops could exist in that, but also they would have that scientific background to know how long they're going to die. How soon they're going to die because of whatever, you know, if it was radiation or whatever.
Yep.
I would probably employ some sort of climate specialist or like kind of like a planetary, because there are certain people that specialize in kind of like migrant activity. Like there's migrant medicine, kind of planetary medicine. That kind of thing. So I'd probably have some sort of planetary like physician or somebody who would like kind of know the different diseases and stuff that could potentially wreak havoc at this point. A therapist, probably. Somebody who's like empathetic and can take things in while not taking them on.
Yeah.
To somebody just generally being a point of peace. I would have some sort of historian or somebody who would have like a high education kind of background and a lower education background, because you know how hard it is for the people that are like at college level to dumb anything down. So you'd want somebody who'd be teach the new generation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would want somebody who's kind of burlier that would be able to kind of defend them from whatever outside forces. So like a really good hunter, somebody who's likely former military or like somebody who would be able to kind of help them survive whatever landscape they're in. I've got two more. I really want some sort of artist, like somebody who can create in a way that would kind of bring that component back to life a little bit. So I would imagine that that would be pretty hard. And then I think the last thing I would do is somebody, you know, I did have somebody on with climate. I would have somebody with like wildlife that would specialize in getting, you know, the general like bird, reptile, mammal populations back so that you can survive off them again. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the 10 items, oh God, I think I would need to, the only things I would have, I would have them choose, each of those people choose a tool that they need. Like, what is your tool that would benefit you the most to get you to a better place? And then I would wish them well and, you know, die in a deadly meteor strike or something. I don't know. But yeah, I'm not joining them. That's not happening. No, thank you.
Yeah.
What about you?
Let's see. I like what you're doing. And I like the idea of it being like 10 people of different
disciplines,
cultures and disciplines and socioeconomic backgrounds. I think it would be good to have at least 2 people who are survivalists. Like they either are very proficient in hunting or like they travel, like they're backpackers who are very experienced of like hiking and how to protect yourself and survive in different climates as far as, you know, building shelter or finding shelter or all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because not all military people are like that.
Yeah. So more survivalists too, like more survivalist people who are adaptable to different weather anomalies and things like that. And being able to travel lightly, at least one medic who would be able to, you know, take care of.
Keep them alive.
Keep them alive. I think it would be good to have, kind of like you said, a couple people who are very proficient at a variety of trade skills. Like maybe they are really good at construction, or they are very good at plumbing or electrical or something where they would be able to help construct a shelter in a way that makes sense, that where they're not going to be like, oh shit, we didn't think of where we're going to go to the bathroom and like water runoff and things like that. I think it would be good to have a couple people who are very proficient in cooking with a variety of ingredients, whether that be, you know, foraging in the wild or with anything that is caught or is caught or trapped or preserved, if you're able to go and scavenge. I think it would be good to have some sort of person of faith. I'm thinking more somebody who is very open, like maybe non-denominational, but still able to kind of pose as a pseudo therapist or like just somebody who is able to like be uplifting in times of turmoil.
Almost like a crisis counselor.
Yeah, something kind of like that. Kind of. And I think the last two would be people who are very experienced in, you know, hunting, fishing, and not only doing that, but like knowing how to process the meats and stuff that they've killed and of the animals they've killed. So I think there's a difference between like hunting for sport and not doing anything with it, and knowing how to take care of the animal from the moment you have killed it to the moment that you eat it. So something like that. And
using the entirety of the animal too.
Yeah. So that you're not leaving a bunch of scraps and whatnot behind, so that you're best utilizing as much of it as you possibly can. And similar to you, I think I would have them kind of choose what would be most beneficial to them to be able to survive in this new landscape.
It feels wrong choosing their tools for them if you're choosing them for their specific expertise.
Yeah, like what's the one thing that each of these people would need to best be able to do what they need to do? And I also think by having a couple of them have similar positions or like roles, quote unquote, then if they would best be benefited by having 2 separate things that they can use together, then at least they each have something that they can share with the other.
Right.
So that's kind of That's kind of where I'm at. Like you, I don't anticipate surviving any sort of apocalyptic event, so I'd rather give people who have a fighting chance the method of doing so. So, yeah.
Agreed.
All right, that was kind of depressing. So what's something good you'd like to share?
Oh my God, this is like so off of apocalypse. It's so not apocalyptic. So one unexpected but very pleasant and welcome something good is I've been trying to get our dogs to be a little more active throughout the day without kind of getting them to be destructive or fight, because a lot of it is inevitable where they get overtired and or they try to resource hoard. And Willie is older and he needs to lose some weight to help his joints out a little bit. So I got the Kong. This is not sponsored, by the way. If they want to, that'd be awesome. But Kong makes this wobble toy where you put food in it and it's got like a little hole and they nose it, they paw at it and stuff, and that's how they get the food out. I got the large one and it's huge. Like it's about the size of this mic. Like it's a good size. And they love it. All three of them are like so stoked. They will eat each other's food that falls out if they're like next to each other, and they won't attack and they won't growl. Mm-hmm. And all of them, as soon as they get the hole at the bottom to like let the food out, they wag their tails.
Aw.
And so they're like really proud of themselves every time they get the food out. And feeding time, like breakfast, instead of taking, you know, 2 seconds, it takes like 15 minutes or so. Like it's a good amount of time where they're just kind of hanging out and trying to get their food. And there's less farting now too, because they have to slow down and actually chew and eat their food. So I cannot recommend it enough to people who have dogs that like eat too fast or are bored and need some sort of mental stimulation, because I heard somewhere that like 15 minutes of like mental effort for a dog is like 30 minutes of like physical activity or something like that. Like it's them having to try hard for stuff is the equivalent of burning calories.
Just as important as physical activity.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, hopefully this will help him out a little bit. And it seems it definitely has a pep in Willie's step. So
it's good.
Yeah. It was really pleasant and it was really fun. And it's just really cute to see them like wagging their tails while they eat their breakfast.
Aww.
Of diet food. So, yeah, that's my something good. What about you?
My something good. Thomas and I have been trying to find, he's all about including me in his hobbies. That's like a thing. That's always been his thing. And
my partner's the same.
One of the things that he is really into is RCing. So over the weekend, we went to a hobby shop and purchased 2 kits to build our own RC crawler vehicles.
Oh.
So he has never built from scratch a RC vehicle. He has repaired them multiple times. He has customized them multiple times. Mm-hmm. This is the first instance where he is building it from literally the ground up. And so that's something that we are experiencing together. I struggle a little bit because I have issues with my hands. I have carpal tunnel and tendonitis. So when it came to like screwing in tiny, tiny screws, I sometimes have to have him do parts of it for me just because my hands cramp up, or they're so unsteady that I keep dropping the bolts on the floor, which is very frustrating. But so far I have built the mechanisms that control the tires.
Nice.
So I've done that so far, and we are going to do some more. And then the goal is to have the frame of the vehicle built by next weekend. And then the body of it, or the you know, like the body of the Jeep itself is clear. Yeah. So we're going to paint them as well.
Fun.
So that'll be a cool, fun thing that we also do. So yeah, RC stuff. And hopefully by the time we finish our vehicles, all the snow will be gone from the ground and we can take them outside for a test drive.
Absolutely. That sounds super fun.
On that note, shall we?
Yeah.
A great way to support the show, if you want to help us out, but you can't do so financially, is to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, and Audible. And we have a new review from Apple Podcasts from user Nappy Dresser. Hey. And it says, 5 stars, Guy Morris interview. Super interesting and creepy. If you like Jenkins, give it a listen. So thank you for that review.
Nice. Thank you.
If you want a playlist of all our episodes on YouTube, click the link in our show notes or in our link tree and subscribe today for not only a list of our full catalog, but a separate list as well, just of our Can You Crack the Crampboard segments. On that note, as always, I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Madison.
And we'll see you next time with another tale
as old as crime.